Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio, Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Welcome. This is Shasta County Elections Candidate Interviews. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. We're interviewing today Alan Long. He's a Board of Supervisors for Shasta County District 2 candidate. Welcome, Alan.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Now, I like the community to get to know the person, not only what they're doing and working in the world, but also your background. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up primarily down in the Bay Area, Palo Alto, and went all the way through graduation from college there and eventually worked there for about 5 years before I came to Redding.
So you grew up that area. Where'd you go to school?
Palo Alto High School.
Palo Alto High School. Any school after high school?
Yes. So I transferred. I eventually graduated from the University of California at Berkeley, went through their business school, and was going to be a major in accounting. So I went through like senior year of accounting, decided that wasn't for me.
You sound like me.
Yeah, it wasn't quite for me. So luckily, a lot of my classes had were eligible to be transferred over, so I graduated with a degree in finance, business administration finance.
Now, bachelor or master's?
That was my bachelor's.
Yeah, my bachelor's in business, so I thought I'd do accounting too, and then I did it, and I thought, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, well, wow.
Yeah.
Great minds, right?
Yes, really.
No, I'm not insulting the profession. It's my son is an accountant, so.
Oh, there you go. How many children do you have?
I have 4 children. My oldest is an attorney, and my second oldest is an accountant, and then I've got 2 little ones that are in elementary school.
Ah, nice. And your older ones, do they live in this area?
No, they're down south.
Bay Area or L.A.?
Well, San Diego and Arizona.
Wow, yes.
Yeah.
Down in the warm country.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good for you. And why Redding?
Well, I was working as a police officer down in the Bay Area for about 5 years. I wanted to come to a rural area. I love the rural area. I love our natural resources, hiking, Trinity Alps. I love riding my motorcycle. All the different things, water sports, everything was here.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked around the state and said, this is where I want to come.
That's awesome. So as a police officer in the San Francisco Bay Area, what did you do?
Well, I started with a sheriff's department, and they put me through the police academy, and then I transferred up to a peninsula, San Mateo Police, where I worked for a few years. Basically, I was patrol. I just made detectives.
So when you came up here, what did you do next?
Well, when you transfer laterally from one agency to the next, you basically start back at the bottom. So I started over again in patrol. And I did that for...
With Redding Police Department?
With Redding Police. Got hired with Redding Police. And I was fortunate to have kind of a broad base of experience at the police department. So I worked in patrol for a number of years. Worked a canine unit, which I loved thoroughly.
Yeah.
And eventually transferred over to our detectives, where I got a kind of a wide swath of experience. Property crimes. I worked our sexual assault unit with all the child abuse cases and that was a very tough assignment.
Yeah, intense.
Very, very intense. And eventually was transferred over to our, they called it major crimes because sexual assault was treated differently. It's a major crime as well. But it was called our major crimes unit, which was the aggravated assault, robbery, and homicide.
So how many years?
In detectives, about 5 years.
5 years in detectives, and how many in the Redding law enforcement?
Well, just under 20 years under at Redding 20. Police, yes.
So about 25 years total in law enforcement.
Correct.
Had a lot of experience.
Had a lot of experience. When I got done with detectives, I started promoting. So I promoted to corporal, eventually to sergeant, and then retired as a lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And the really cool thing about that extra experience for those positions was when I became part of management, I was involved with personnel. I was put in charge of one of our 4 divisions in the department, the services division. had about 100 employees, and so dealt with personnel matters and budgets and things like that, equipment.
Wow. So you've seen the crime situation firsthand in Shasta County.
Correct. So, wow. And also, when I was a sergeant, I was in charge of our neighborhood police unit. I wasn't the actual neighborhood police officer, but I went out into the camps with the officers, and we worked with the homeless and plugging them into services and trying to figure out that whole situation.
Yeah.
So I have on the ground experience in our homeless camps with the homeless.
And you ended up retiring from there.
Correct.
And what'd you do after that?
So as I said earlier, I've got two smaller children, so they are absolutely my priority. So I have been raising them because my wife is still knee deep in her career. And also I ran for and got elected to the Grant School Board. So
how long have you been serving there?
This is my sixth year, second term. And the fun experience with Grant has been that I was on the board during car fire,
yeah,
during COVID, during all of our power outages. We've hired two superintendents during that term, so it's given me a really broad experience at the board level working with those issues. And it's kind of funny because in my police career, I was a labor rep, labor guy, not a rep, but a labor. I was in unions my entire career, and I was our associations, the Reading Peace Officers Association. I was their treasurer based on my financial background, and I was also one of the negotiators working with the city on contract issues. So I saw it from a labor perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, as a school board member, I see it from a management perspective, which is the other side of the coin. So I'm involved in negotiations, looking out for the budget, our bottom line, what we can afford, paying appropriate wages to keep and recruit good talent in our staff. So we're competitive with our salary packages. So, but we make it work within our budget. So good experience.
Working with Grant, the staff that you were really oversight of, that included who? Did it include the educators as well?
Oh, yes. We have our Teachers Association, CTA, and we have our basically our classified staff. So we have the entire school staff, including the superintendent, which we've hired.
And how many on your board?
There's five on the board.
Five, huh?
Correct.
Wow. That's good to be in that kind of, you get education, you get management, you get law enforcement, you get negotiations. You have a whole spectrum of
and
experience.
I don't think we covered it, but back in my education days when I was a police officer, police lieutenant actually, I went back and got my master's degree in public administration.
Ah, so good for you.
Public administration is directly applicable to the police department, and it is definitely applicable to county government.
Yes. Kind of all forms of government or business management.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're working with people, you're working with budgets, you're working lots of elements.
Yeah, a lot of pieces to this puzzle.
Yes, definitely. So we discussed your educational background. I also wanted to ask you if you have ever, you served on the Grant Board, Grant School Board. Were there any other commissions or committees you've served on that you haven't mentioned?
Yes. So when I was in the Peace Officers Union, I was the treasurer and a negotiator. So I've served in those capacities in those organizations. I was also, while I was with the police department when I was a lieutenant, I was the regional director for California Peace Officers Association, which is a statewide training organization. So I was the director in charge of, I think, the seven northern counties up here.
Mm-hmm.
Shasta, Siskiyou, Trinity, Lassen, those kinds of the counties, Tehama.
Wow, good. I think it's important when people have that diversity of experience, you know, not only in working with a school board, but also in law enforcement. And, you know, your background's very diverse. Master's degree in business, you have the bachelor degree.
That's
good.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm excited for this position, because I'm ready for it. I've got the background experience.
Experience.
And educationally and and I have the heart for this job, and I'm watching what's going on, and I have the interest in this job.
Yeah. When you say heart for it, what are you pointing to?
Well, there's some people, what they do is they talk about a lot of things, and there are others that jump in and just do it. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself in that category where I'm a quiet person, but I just go about getting things done. Mm-hmm. And that's something I would bring to the board for. And I consider that the heart, because you're all in and you're dedicated and you're committed and you're trying to see the results that will benefit everyone.
Don't you think, too, having children that are still in the school system young, your investment's a little more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So not only am I invested because I live in this community personally, mm-hmm. but I'm invested for having a better community for our kids.
Yes, certainly. Certainly need that, don't we?
We do.
I want to clarify, too, for the listeners. I always like to ask each guest that we've had on for the candidates, what is your political affiliation and what was your decision in choosing that affiliation?
Okay, I'm a no party preference. So I remember when I was 18 and I first registered to vote, I had the idea and the thought that nobody's going to tell me how to vote. I'm going to vote based on my own research, and I'm going to become aware of the issues, and I'm going to vote based on what I think is the right thing to do, not just simply a party line that's fed to me.
Mm-hmm. So when you first began voting, it was in that framework? Did you vote in a particular party to begin with?
No, I've never been, I was American Independent Party when I first registered at 18, so they're both kind of independent.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept, and that's what I'm drawn to more and more. The question always is what comes in for your primary voting capacity with all that. So a little research on my part needs to be done.
Yes.
So you've worked with a lot of different groups. So is there an approach you have when there's differences of perspectives or conflict between groups or people? Is there a kind of like a way of working with it, viewing or philosophy that you have in overcoming those kind of things?
Yes. Boy, how do you put that in a nutshell?
I know, it's hard.
It is.
You did mention, you know, you worked with a union and you've worked with all contracts, so I'm sure not everyone's going, oh, yes, let's do this.
especially not the employer, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so I would say that, well, I'll kind of back it up to more of a broad sense to start mm-hmm. with. But as a police officer, we were known as peace officers, categorically. Mm-hmm. And so my job, you could not have been successful in my job if you didn't learn how to resolve conflict, how to de-escalate tension, and problem solve with good, solid common sense and keeping an open mind to the issues. So you put that kind of at the forefront, and I think that is a big part of why I've been successful in some of the things that I've attempted, whether it's labor negotiations, whether it's running a political campaign, this is entirely new, mm-hmm. whether it's solving a neighborhood problem when I went out as an officer, or solving a crime with very reluctant witnesses, or a very hostile individuals or people that are in extreme emotional trauma, grief. So you learn to adapt quickly to all situations. And I think that's a very valuable skill set that I didn't know I was building, mm-hmm. but I think that has really helped me in a lot of the endeavors I've taken on in my life, whether it's the stick-to-itiveness as, you know, getting my master's degree and my bachelor's, staying with something, staying with a career through some, it's a challenging career.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
And trying to always keep a focus on why I'm doing it. And I got into law enforcement. That's a funny question sometimes people ask. They ask, why did you switch from? Because right when I got out of college, I went into banking. And we didn't talk about that. So I was hired by Bank of America, and I went through their management training program.
Excellent.
And came out as a commercial loan officer analyst. And so I was charged, tasked with lending to businesses. So you had to understand their credit worthiness to make a bank loan that was appropriate. Mm-hmm. So you got into all the financials of businesses and the analysis of that. So a lot of people have asked me, well, why did you switch from business into law enforcement?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting question, one my parents have also asked, but that's another story, another time. I had a feeling that I wanted to make a difference in our society. I wanted to have what I did really matter. And so I thought that law enforcement for me, given my interests and things like that, would be a perfect fit. And so my entire adult life essentially has been community service in one form or another, and I'm still continuing that path.
It's powerful. If you just joined us, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections Candidate Interviews. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This is a presentation of KKRN, 88.5 FM Community Radio, and we're here in conversation with Shasta County Board of Supervisor candidate Alan Long, who's running for District 2. So when you think of law enforcement, when I think of law enforcement anyway, my brother was a Trinity County Marshal. My other brother worked in law enforcement in the Forest Service during his career, and then Reserve Sheriff's Department in Tulare County before he retired. There's so many things you're dealing with. You know, we're talking about that conflict and de-escalation, and that's a pretty challenging scenario, and it gives you were there dealing with the crime element. Do you think that dealing with the crime element, because you also have a perspective and view of the judicial system and how we're rehabilitating or not.
Right.
Criminals.
Trying.
You're trying.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's a unique perspective to be able to bring to the task of county government.
I would agree. That's why I'm here. So it's one thing to say that you identify the problems, and it's another thing to feel that I'm qualified to step up and actually help with those problems. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has a background to be a supervisor, and everybody's experience is not the same. But given my experience in government with our community, I think it's an applicable experience background to step up and understand issues, whether it's the financial issues the county faces, whether it's the social impact of different policies, and you know, boots on the ground, actually mm-hmm. having been out in the communities trying to figure out all walks of life.
Yeah, yes, challenging. You know, sometimes I've had interviews with different individuals that work with the homeless on the streets and through healthcare primarily, and some law enforcement as well. And it's just such a challenging situation to try to figure out exactly how to help each individual is different. So having a perspective and experience broad-based is helpful, I think.
Right. And my goal is to always work towards solutions. Mm-hmm. Not just pushing the problem down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I was a police officer, a lot of times we would go into the homeless camps and we would try to plug into services. And that was challenging because most resisted the help. And so I was always a little bit frustrated with the fact that we never seemed to actually solve the problem. And I like to get solutions. And I think I've come to the realization with our homeless situation, you can't solve it completely,
mm-hmm.
but you can certainly make it a lot better, and you can make it a lot better for the homeless themselves, and you can make it a lot better for the rest of the citizens that are dealing with the issues connected with homelessness.
Yes. Do you think any particular reason you saw that resistance and wanting to get plugged into services?
Well, my take on it I was familiar with the operations of the mission and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of plugging into services involves rules and kind
structure.
Of restrictions and structure and those kinds of things. And a lot of people didn't want that restriction. And then when you start to look at the homeless issue, you realize that this is a very complex issue, and one size does not fit all.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are mental health issues, there are drug addiction issues that alter behaviors and perceptions and willingness to get into a system. So you start to put all that together, it's complex, and it actually is individualized to a certain extent.
Yes. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, is Shasta County government, Board of Supervisors, have gotten a lot of attention, not only locally, but nationally. The tension, the discord, the hostility, the loud shouting.
Sure, sure, sure.
Everything that's been going on.
It's a sideshow.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And I always encourage people, there's ways, you don't have to be in that room to know what's going on. You can watch it live as it's unfolding. You can watch it, it's videotaped. And you can talk with each Board of Supervisors by email or phone call. You know, I always encourage people to engage in the process versus backing away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were elected to the Board of Supervisors and you're in that room where there's a lot of tension and conflict, any thoughts about how to bridge all those divisions in that room?
Well, that's a good question. So I think elections count. Mm-hmm. This election is probably the most serious time in our county's history, that especially during the time I've lived here for 32 years, this is the most important election, because we can decide as voters who we want on that board, and that board makeup will determine a lot of the decorum, the civility, the process, and things like that going forward. So the board makeup does matter, and the votes people cast do matter. So as far as what would I do if I get into that position? So there's two scenarios. One would be there's a new board majority with certain movements, and that will be a much easier situation, quite honestly, because we can bring this back down and get away from a lot of the direction that the board has been taking recently in the past couple years, which is why I'm stepping up to do this as well.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not in a majority and it's very contentious, then what you have to do is you have to work on your skill sets to try to bridge division, to bring respect back, to try to slow things down a little bit. Let's calm this down and let's get back to proper county functioning. And I think personally, one of the things that is my strength, having been an officer for all those years, no doubt, is the ability to develop relationships, and relationships where you don't attack people. You're looking for what the problems are, and you're looking for solutions for the problem. And so as a board member, if you're not in a majority, I think you rely on developing relationships that are not based on personal attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're based on the issues, and then trying to come to common sense decisions with those, and trying to build consensus within your community that can apply appropriate pressure to have things done that should be done.
You know, I think one of the challenges when people have the 3 minutes for speaking to the board and sharing is in the past, we've seen people really escalate and disrespectful. And I think it, to me, as an outsider, as a constituent in the community, I would want the board to say, hey, 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 you can share.
Right, right.
But there's a standard in how you share.
Absolutely.
Do you think that's appropriate?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. So what I value is that we are a diverse community,
mm-hmm.
and we all have different opinions on things,
mm-hmm.
and we all have a right to be heard, and we
absolutely.
All have a right to be heard in a reasonable fashion, not the circus atmosphere where people are doing just these crazy antics, because one, that's distracting, two, it serves no purpose, and three, it's disrespectful to the speaker who may have a different opinion than you do on something.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to honor all the opinions, and we have to let everybody feel that they are heard and respected, And the board has to take into account not just their constituent base, but the entire constituent base within their district and the county, actually, because I think they integrate into the whole. So, we all have a right to representation. We all have a right to be heard. We all have a right to our voice.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, in my private practice, a licensed marriage family therapist, when I'm working with people and developing, helping them develop skills in overcoming conflict to de-escalate situations, you know, people get upset and they get louder and louder and louder and louder. And I always tell them, if you speak softly, all of a sudden you have the attention of everyone, because it's such a, such a contrast that people go, oh, because most of us, when there's yelling going on, we're defensive about it. You know, we're not taking it in. We're buffering it because it's so caustic.
Absolutely. And when you're not taking it in, you're not hearing the message, right?
Yeah.
All you are is in a survival mode.
Yes.
And it's just a fight or flight kind of a situation. And then that's not productive to solving the problem.
Yeah.
So when you take and try to keep the emotion part of it controlled, which I think is done through not attacking people, mm-hmm. not disrespecting people, those kinds of things. Those are skill sets, actually. And if you can get around those and just get to the issue, then the person doesn't feel under attack and you get much better resolutions for your problems and you can actually be heard on a message. And I believe that a lot of good communication is listening.
Yeah.
And that's maybe an underrated skill, because people always like to talk, right? But you learn so much more, and it gives the person you're working with the idea that you actually want to hear what I have to say. And we did that all the time as a police officer. So
sure.
I found that there were a lot of situations that required immediate action. Okay, that's part of being a police officer, right? But most times you could back it off just a little bit and slow it down and let somebody be heard and hear multiple perspectives and come up with really cool solutions. Once people felt they were being respected, they were being listened to, they would go along with the program. So I always thought that my mouth was a much more important tool than other tools. And I'm not trying to minimize that, because we have the tools that we need to do the job.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that. But your command presence and your calm, de-escalating manner and your words and your voice, powerful, powerful tools to help resolve situations.
And it's my experience that when people are yelling or upset, they really want to be heard. And so when you point to listening, taking that time, which sometimes isn't always convenient.
Right.
But it's essential, I think, to be able to hear what they have to say. Sometimes there's information there that we can use to create a part of the solution.
Absolutely. And some might say that taking a minute to slow things down is not expedient. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that it's actually more expedient, because you have a better chance of resolving an issue and not having to come back out to the problem. You have a greater likelihood of gaining compliance without massive resistance. So there's a lot to be said about listening and appropriate respect and a certain calm
Mm-hmm. I think too, the founding of our democracy, it was we the people. And so it's not about just a segment of the community running everything. It's trying to take into account everyone. Yes, you have the vote that says the majority has selected this, but hopefully the people that are elected are not only taking in what those who voted for them wanted them to do, but all people in the community.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's a critical thing to keep in mind. When elected, you serve all the people.
You do serve all the people, and yeah. I look at it that way. You obviously have the responsibility to know what your constituents want in the community, and the majority does matter, but that's not to say that you can't incorporate some of the other needs by listening and figuring solutions that do work toward everybody's betterment.
Absolutely. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections Candidate Interviews. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. We are here in conversation with a candidate, Alan Long, who's running for Shasta County Board of Supervisors for District 2. So also, Alan, I wanted to ask you about when you think of the challenges that are facing Shasta County. We've touched upon homelessness, having the unsheltered, and that's a big area to think about. So obviously homelessness is one of those. What else do you think are the major issues facing Shasta County?
Well, we have the perfect storm when it comes to crime in the community. And I look at crime in the community in kind of two parts. One is the actual crime rates, which in property crimes and some of the aggravated assaults, those have jumped significantly based on statistics released a little bit ago. And another part of the component is the perception of crime in the community and the perception of safety. And that matters to me just as much as the actual crime rate. And it's the thing where if I park my bike, it won't be there when I come back out to find it. Okay. If I have my family walking home from theater, you know, at night, do they feel safe walking through our downtown? It's a lot of those issues, which are perceptions. And I would answer the there's a lot of fear in our community currently. So that is very important to me. And I hear that on the campaign trail from everybody universally. They want accountability for crime and they want to feel safe in their community. And my background, of course, that's very important to me as well. So I would look at capacities to figure this very complex situation out, which is going to have a component of criminal activity. I need to have the bed space to hold people in our jail facilities. And we've got a perfect storm with things like prison realignment, AB 109, which occurred 2011. And basically, people that were sentenced previously to state prison for felonies, but they were deemed nonviolent felonies, they've been returned to our community. And they're occupying a bed space sometimes for 15 years, and the state is not funding that, even though they mandate that. So the funding for that has just gradually dwindled and dwindled. And so now it's not something that's really a part of our funding situation. So when that happens and our jail gets filled with a lot of people that were prior state commitments, all of our quality of life, people just get kicked out of the doors with little accountability. And that is what we as a population are all very upset about. And so we need to have adequate jail space and incorporate it. I like the idea of Sheriff Johnson's plan, which is incorporating a facility that has multi-components to it. So that you've got proper bed space to hold people that are committing crimes accountable. You've also got a mental health component in the facility. You've got a drug addiction component. And so you try to figure out each individual situation and where their course is. And when I was an officer, I would be invited to, it was called Addicted Offender Program, graduations. And those were successes. And so people are important and all people are important. So the community of the homeless is important. The community of all of us are important. We just have to figure out how to hold people accountable for their actions and get them treatment that they need so that we can keep them from committing future action if that's where we are. And realizing that there's going to be a portion of our population that they just may never be able to plug in based on their particulars, and we have to step up and help with that.
I know in the past there's been some research conducted somewhere in the nation. I can't remember where it was now. It seems like it's Texas, but I don't want to say that for sure. But they surveyed the unsheltered homeless and determined that like a third would probably always need to be cared for. They weren't able to really be rehabilitated for mental health, addiction issues. And so to me, as a business person here.
Right, right.
To have people living on the street, to me, is unkind. And even if we have to house them, I think that's part of the responsibility of our society. What do you think about that?
I agree. And I know that's an unpopular idea of subsidized fill in the blank, right? But what we have to recognize is there is tremendous funding available at the state level, uh-huh. at the federal level, and we should be availing ourselves of every last dollar of that and grabbing onto it because it's going to help. Mm-hmm. And nobody in our community, whether it's the homeless or the rest of the population that's not homeless, they don't want to deal with the issues of the homeless situation personally. So let's come up with a solution to try to reduce that population, and it's going to be a win.
Get them plugged in.
Get them plugged in, and there's a lot that can be rehabbed. Mm-hmm. There are people in the homeless situation that have, they're just living paycheck to paycheck, and they just have an unfortunate situation that occurs, and now they're living out of their car or surfing on people's couches, and there is no one size fits all to this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think what has been addressed and identified on my campaign is that accountability for crime. People are tired of people in the revolving door, cops and the district attorneys. They're demoralized in a sense because there's no place to put people if they're held accountable, and laws have changed where it's hard to hold some accountable. And so it's a real challenge, but it's something you can't just have a one size fits all approach to it. That sounds good, but it's not applicable, and it's not realistic. So I think we need to have a situation where we hold people accountable for their criminal activity, and work towards solutions and trying to better the situation with people that are living on our streets and all that entails.
I don't think I've asked this question of the other candidates, but since you have this background in law enforcement, I know that one of the things that is deeply valued in the North State is the right to own a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been lots of talk about enforcing greater liberties. I'm a gun owner, but I'm uncomfortable with people having assault rifles. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that you want to share, or jury's out for you. How do you feel about it?
No. We have a constitutional right, in my opinion, to bear arms, mm-hmm. and that shall not be infringed. So I'm a very strong advocate of our rights. We have a bill that came forward, which is Senate Bill 2, and basically the Supreme Court has weighed in on the Bruin case and has basically told California where our gun rights should rest, and our right to a CCW, conceal, and things like that. I don't personally agree with Senate Bill 2, which is basically making that they cannot carry or have their constitutional right in any kind of public place, essentially. So I think that's an overreach on behalf of our state, and I respect the right, and I will never not respect that right to have and bear firearms.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at what's happened here locally, I think you've got California Penal Code 171, which says there are restricted areas that you don't carry a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we're being told that go ahead and disregard that law and go ahead and carry a firearm in like the board chambers and things like that. But I don't see that being lawful.
Yeah.
And so I believe in freedom of speech. You can't yell fire in a movie theater. There are always, and there have always been restrictions. And California's, my opinion, has gone too far, way too far with imposing restrictions. However, appropriate restrictions, especially if the law says that you can't carry in certain places, then you can't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm a rule follower and a law abider, and I think we're a nation of law, and we operate within the laws, and if you don't like the laws, you go to Sacramento and you change the law. Mm-hmm. You don't just get to decide that we're not going to follow the state law. Mm-hmm. And I think this decision is reckless. And I think it's going to get people arrested because the law didn't go away.
Right.
And so I know that's a long way of answering your question, but I respect the Second Amendment tremendously, and I don't want that infringed. But I also don't respect when we go against established state law and just tell people it's okay to not follow law.
Yeah, that so, will just get people in trouble.
That's going to get people arrested.
Yeah.
And
I think the challenge, too, is for me, gun ownership, gun use has to be responsible.
Absolutely.
Informed. And if you have people that get highly emotional and aren't in the best mental state to not draw a weapon, then that becomes dangerous. So responsible gun ownership, I think, is imperative. And I think that's, they're trying to institute that versus maybe more education, more.
Right. No, I think you, and that's why there have been certain safe zones. Historically, there have been, and that's part of the well-regulated component to things. And it's not restricting your right. It's just, it's putting rules into effect that will make it safe for everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm a great respecter of our Second Amendment rights for firearms. I was a police officer, and we are pro gun rights.
Yeah. So it sounds like you think that the relationship with the state and federal government is important to have a good relationship as county government.
Absolutely. And what people forget is that county government's a little bit different than a city municipality in the sense that we are actually one of 58 components to the state government. The counties, we're 58 counties, and we're actually linked right into that structure. So do I agree with everything out of Sacramento? I do not. Mm-hmm. Do I think that we have to follow laws? Yes, we do. And I'll give you an example. So sitting on the school board, we were faced with COVID, and we were given mandates from the state, and we were given highly recommended actions. And so the state highly recommended that we close our school, and they had other mandates. And so our board, and which was a divided board a little bit, we said, is that a mandate from the state, or is that a highly recommended status? Well, it's recommended highly, and schools across the state were shutting down because we didn't know what COVID was, and people, there was a lot of fear running through our community.
Yeah.
So what we decided as a board was, let's slow this down a little bit. Let's figure out what the mandates are, because we are tied into the state funding and all those issues and liability. And let's figure out where we have some room to be creative, if you will, and use the science, the health director's recommendations, and help guide us through this, because we were not subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. We were coming up to speed like everyone else was. So because it wasn't mandated, we made the decision for the interest of our constituents, which are our children, that we did not want them to fall behind. So let's keep our school open, which we did, one of the very few. We kept our school open entirely. And yet we implemented safety measures to keep everybody safe. And we ended up kind of navigating through this without problems. And our kids are not behind right now. So that's my example of how you work within state law and figure out creative solutions based on your particulars in your area. And so because the school didn't, the state didn't mandate we shut down, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, the other thing, too, I think, is oftentimes people think, well, we're a county, we can run our own thing. However, we are dependent financially upon the state and federal government. I mean, we can't survive only by ourselves.
That is correct. And so that is where you have to be respectful, mindful, and creative, because we are dependent on state funding.
Yeah.
And, some people don't always think about it, but we have, in a sense, a subsidized rural lifestyle up here for roads, and a lot of things come from the wealth that is generated in other parts of the state, and we get to live this wonderful life that we have up here, but we are dependent on state funding, and we have to be responsible, and we must follow the law. And it ties into so many things that if you don't figure out how to navigate properly, you invite lawsuits, you invite loss of funding, you invite all kinds of trouble. You invite OSHA-driven complaints in your workplace because you're not following a state mandate. And those are heavy fines. So you have to look out for the solvency of your entity. In this case, the county government. In my case, currently, it's been the school board. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And that is a complex situation involving multiple variables, and you can't just recklessly approach that.
Yeah. I do think that's also why having the skill set to be able to work collaboratively doesn't mean you always agree with everything that's done by anyone. I don't know that anyone agrees with everyone.
No, you can't by definition, right?
So yes. How do you work when they're not on the same page, and how can you get on the same page even if you don't agree?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good objective to have.
And one of my goals getting on the board is to get down to RCRC and CSAC.
And what's some RCAC?
Those are some rural counties. So it's basically the liaison between the county of Shasta and the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And you advocate strongly for bringing resources and our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is developed through relationships at the state level. So you don't want to just alienate the state because you have to work within the framework we have.
Yes.
And you have to work within the law, and you have to work within the budgets, and you have to work within all these parameters and still be effective.
Yes. And I think you have a stronger voice if they can respect how you operate, how you listen, how you negotiate, how you bring maybe a disagreement or a different worldview to the table. You know, how you do that makes all the difference in building respect and being able to develop a working relationship.
Correct.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
This is a segment of Shasta County Elections, Candidate Interviews. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm here in conversation with Alan Long. He is a candidate for Shasta County Board of Supervisors, District 2. You know, you mentioned before what drew you to be a candidate was really about service.
It's about service, and it's about watching what's been going on in our community of recent last couple years. I don't like the direction. I don't like the outside influence of a major mega donor, which is Reverge Anselmo, and the money he's putting into our local elections, which I believe are affecting the outcomes. And we should have local control and local say, not from somebody that has a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I've watched that. I've watched some of the pet projects. I've watched the fact that a lot of things have been rushed through legislatively. Hurried, in my opinion, without proper review. I've watched our county government falling apart. Our department heads are turning over. They're leaving en masse. And we're missing a lot of opportunities by having a stable workforce, which then allows us to get to regular business. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of very pressing needs, but we're getting distracted, and the dysfunction is causing great jeopardy for those programs and functions. And I can tell you about what I think about those, but we've got to stabilize our government and get us back to treating our staff with respect and proper compensation and holding a good, solid workforce. And then that is the jumping stone for everything else, that jumping off point.
Plus, county government, you know, provides programs that really help those that are in need.
Absolutely.
That need services.
Absolutely.
So if that becomes unstable, is not functioning at highest level, it impacts those with the most need.
And then you get something like the COC, Continuum of Care, being transferred over to the city that's going to administer it.
Yeah.
Right? So it does have consequences on all levels, with all levels of programs. And I want to see that stop.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things I wanted to ask, I asked this of all the candidates, all fielding the same questions. Do you think there was voter fraud that happened across the nation?
Well, you've got our county and you've got the nation.
Uh-huh.
I think there's always going to be a level of voter fraud when you're talking a national situation, because somebody moves out of district, they continue voting. There's a lot of those kinds of things. At a local level, I have seen no evidence, and I would not have been in favor of discontinuing our Dominion voting machine contract, especially because we didn't have a backup to it.
Mm-hmm.
And to continue this now in the face of California law, which says it's illegal to hand count based on our population size, we're continuing down this path. It's costing us millions of dollars. And I would encourage everybody, because I have done it myself, go to our registrar's office and say, I want the tour of point A to point Z of our election process here. And I want, and I've done that, and I've asked a lot of very, very deep questions about what happens the minute the vote is cast out at one of our stations to the point where it's tabulated and all that kind of thing. So I've walked through the entire process, and I've walked into the rooms where it's conducted, and I've asked the questions. And think something that I learned that a lot of people don't consider is that the Dominion voting machines that are built for Shasta County are built to a different standard based on more restrictive California law than they might be in other parts of the country. They're different machines. And they have, by state law, they do not have the ability to have a wireless transmission of data, so they're not going to be hacked externally by somebody living in a different state. They are tabulators off hand paper ballots, and they are, so, and suffice it to say, I've gone through all of the parts of that, and I see no evidence. And I'm somebody that works off evidence, and I've seen no evidence of fraud. And I think Kathy Allen Darling has done a remarkable job. I respect her highly, and I think she's very competent. And what has happened to her, another thing I'm talking about, that's just unwarranted, and it doesn't do anything to serve the county good.
In fact, it is detrimental to the county.
Absolutely.
The well-being.
It's detrimental to her, and she didn't deserve that. And it's detrimental to our county and our integral election process, which we do have integrity here.
Yeah. What I was wanting to clarify with you, across the nation, do you think the voter fraud is so prevalent that, like the presidential election that was supposedly stolen, do you think that's true?
No, I do not.
Okay.
So, I think
there can be attempts.
There's attempts, and there are skirmishes, if you will, where we hear about some of these. We hear about some things, but I have not seen anything to indicate that we had a stolen election. No.
Plus, there's been a lot of research on it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
we don't have time to go into all that, but
yeah. Absolutely. Why do you encourage people to vote?
I would encourage people to vote because it's very critical that we all come out and vote. Because if every voter does not turn out, then we don't have an adequate representation of who they want in office. So I would encourage everybody to come out. It's super important this time, this election, and come out March 5th and vote. Why would you vote for me? First of all, I have the passion. I recognize the issues, and I've worked hard my entire career to develop the background and the skill sets and the education and the work experience, varied work experience, to be ready to take on this position and these challenges that our county is facing right now. So I would encourage you, and I'm asking for your vote.
Excellent. I think too that, oftentimes people think, well, my vote doesn't matter. And I always tell them, take one sentence of any paragraph and remove, say, the letter E, the letter T, whatever you want. And you'll notice that it makes it very difficult to understand what's really written there. Every vote counts. Whether we believe it or not, it truly does. And I encourage people, if they're not registered, get registered. You can actually even register the day of the election by going to the Registrar of Voters office on Market Street. So it's an opportunity to have a voice, to participate.
Absolutely. And I believe in accurate representation. And whatever the results of the vote, March 5th, I will live by that because I believe that's the vote of the people. My thought is I want all the people to register and come out and vote. And that way we have a true representation.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot afford apathy and the thought that my vote doesn't really matter, so I won't turn out and vote. No, that's not good.
Yeah. So this one last question. If elected, when you make decisions as a supervisor, who determines your decision? Is there any organizational influence or are you your own person when you make a decision?
Yes, and that I think that's one of the strengths I bring to this. So we're going back to when I registered when I was 18. If you recall, mm-hmm. I said I did that because I'm my own person and I will vote according to what my research is and what I think the right thing to do is. And that's pretty much held my entire life. I've been an independent thinker, and that's probably why Revergen Selmo and WaterPAC users, they're not coming to me and offering funding because I'm not somebody that can be purchased for a vote. So that's important to me. And the beauty of this is I'm retired. I'm okay. So mm-hmm. I don't need this job for money, and I don't need it's hard to say, but I don't have strings attached. Mm-hmm. So I'm free to do what the right thing is to do because I don't have all the special interests that have latched on.
Why don't you take about 20 seconds and answer this. If your analysis says this is what I think the decision should be, but your constituents want something else, how do you work with that? What do you do with that?
Well, it's not my personal beliefs, and I believe strongly that I'm a representative, and it's not what do I think. And I said that when I was on the school board. I have my own personal fears of COVID, but I'm looking out for what the constituents need and who are we serving here. So that ultimately in my book is the most important factor. And the challenge is figuring out what that is.
Yes.
But my beliefs are just one more citizen's beliefs, right? And I don't know. I'm not a subject matter expert on everything.
Right.
Some things, yes. Most things probably no. And so it's important that we stay in tune with our constituents and know what they want in order to vote based on what they want.
If people want more information on you, what's your website?
It's allenlongforsupervisor2024.com, and that's spelled out allenlongfor, supervisor2024.com.
Do you have a phone number?
Yes, 530-917-7483.
Are you available on social media?
Yes. So you can go to my Facebook page and you can follow the entire campaign on Facebook, and you can Google that or search engine that, and that will get you to the Facebook page, and that has all the endorsements and where I stand on issues and things like that.
Thank you, Allen Long, Shasta County Board of Supervisors candidate for District 2. This has been a presentation of KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, Shasta County Elections, Candidate Interviews. I'm Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. Thank you for joining us.